Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, and supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls because we have with us on the line right now from Newsmax magazine, certainly one of my favorite guests, and an author, and certainly a journalist, and a man who really has a grasp on much of what's going on, Carl Limbacher. Carl, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan, for having me back on the show.
Well, tell us, what are the latest issues? Of course, you always are writing so many different things, and I went to the website and pulled down a couple of your articles, but what did you want to talk about this afternoon?
Well, the big story today and yesterday has been the 9/11 Commission hearings in Washington. And what's been transpiring, towards the end of the day in today's hearings, really does call into question, I think, the very raison d'etre for the existence of this commission in the first place. One of the things that we were supposed to avoid here is partisan finger-pointing and blame-shifting over 9/11. This was, after all, a national security issue that we wanted to keep as far away from politics and election year posturing as we could, but having those hearings start up earlier this year and then carry in, they're going to conclude on July 26th, that's the opening day of the Democratic National Convention. It's inevitable that you'd have the kind of political bickering that does not serve either the cause of investigation or national security very well. That said, pouring gasoline on the fire, we had today Richard Clark, the former counterterrorism czar in the Clinton White House. He served President Bush 41 briefly before, spending the 8 years in the Clinton White House and for about a year in the Bush 43 White House before he was demoted to a cybersecurity chief. And he's sounding more and more like a disgruntled employee than ever before. It's really a sight to behold, the media buildup that Mr. Clark got. I don't know if anyone was counting. I was. He was a top-of-the-hour news story in most of the network news rotations, the radio reports, and all the rest, for about 3 days. I haven't seen another story consume that much electronic ink probably since the 9/11 attacks themselves, and yet they've really been banging away on behalf of this guy and his book, and the 60 Minutes interview, and now the commission hearings today. And look, not to take anything away from the fact that he was at the center of things. He does have a perspective to and some insight to contribute, but the guy comes to this with a kind of axe to grind that is apparent and did expose itself today, given some of the challenges he faced by the panel. We've covered some of it on Newsmax, and maybe after the break I can give you some of those details.
Well, of course, if he has a story to tell, don't you think that the American people deserve to hear what he has to say, having been there? Because nobody in the administration would ever dare come out and tell the truth, or they'd lose their job, wouldn't they?
I agree with the first part of that he has a story to tell, and he should be heard.
Let's be back here in just a moment.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news. Now, our guest with us today is Carl Limbacher from Newsmax, magazine. He's a journalist, and he's written books. We've interviewed him on in the past, and he's talking about, of course, Richard Clark, who was the former terrorism czar, and then, of course, when the Bush administration came in, the administration just stopped really being concerned about terrorism, and, of course, he was demoted. They did not have anybody primarily concerned about terrorism except Condoleezza Rice, and according to Richard Clark, he repeatedly tried to get meetings with her and with the president, and there was just no way that they wanted to talk about terrorism. Now, all we hear is that they were sure that there was going to be a terrorist attack, it was going to be overseas, and Richard Clark was convinced it was going to be right here in the United States. In fact, all the evidence shows that they knew it was going to be here in the United States, and yet nothing was done effectively to thwart a terrorist attack here. So I'm going to let Carl tell his side of the story. He thinks, well, let's get what you think about what Richard Clark is doing.
Well, the problem I have with Mr. Clark is that I guess he's not subtle at all. He said over the weekend that the Bush administration has done a terrible job in the war on terrorism, and he's had nothing but praise for the Clinton administration and their efforts in the war on terrorism. And the real problem here is that the current account that he's giving is in stark contrast to some previous accounts he's offered, some of them fairly recent. For instance, he was the chief source for Richard Miniter's book, Losing Bin Laden. And Miniter, throughout that book, quotes Clark as disparaging of the Clinton administration efforts in the war on terrorism, saying that he was constantly urging them to take stronger action in the form of a cruise missile attack or an invasion or a snatch operation, something to neutralize the al-Qaeda threat. And that to a man and a woman, whether it was Defense Secretary Richard Cohn, Madeleine Albright at State, go right down the list, the George Tenet at CIA, every one of them raised objections every time Clark wanted to take action. Now, you step back and you look at this picture, it begins to look like the only guy who got it and who is the ultimate hero of his own tale is none other than Richard Clark. This was the story he was telling back then. And in fact, we learned today, or at least according to former Navy Secretary...
Hold that thought for just a moment here, and we'll be back just in a moment with Carl Limbacher. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, with us Carl Limbacher. He's talking about the situation as far as Richard Clark is concerned, and he was commenting that the material that we had interviewed Richard Miniter in his book Losing Bin Laden, which pointed out that during the Clinton administration, on at least 11 occasions, there was opportunities to take out Osama bin Laden, and the Clinton administration refused to do that. And, of course, you go through that, and time after time after time, there were opportunities. Certainly the government of the Sudan wanted to turn Osama bin Laden over to the United States. And, of course, at that time, we knew he'd been involved with the first attack on the World Trade Center and the downing of Black Hawk Down in Somalia and the bombing in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia. And the Sudanese government is ready to turn over all the records on al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden himself to the United States, and the Clinton administration wouldn't take him. So that was basically the story of Richard Miniter's book, isn't that right?
Yeah, it's an excellent synopsis, Dr. Stan.
Okay, go ahead.
And if it were that alone, you could probably give the guy a pass, but apparently in testimony before this very same commission, this 9/11 commission before which he appeared today, you know, when they do these things, they don't put these guys before the TV cameras without some preliminary debriefing, some pre-interviews, if you will, where they get an idea of what the guy's going to say. So Clark spent some 15 hours being grilled by committee staffers prior to being called as a witness today. And in fact, according to former Navy Secretary John Layman, his account was in stark contrast to what he's saying, both in his book and testifying to under oath today in this hearing chamber.
Well, maybe he felt that if he told them the truth beforehand, they wouldn't put him on, because that's the sort of thing you do. If you don't like what they're going to say, you never wanted to get it to the public. So you tell the truth, why they're not going to put you on.
You know, if that was the case, I think it'd be a problem, maybe from a legal standpoint, but maybe you could defend him as an act of civil disobedience. Clark hasn't said that so far. Maybe he will, and that you're right, that would change the, put this in a whole different light.
But of course, there could be no question what he was going to say, having heard him on 60 Minutes, when he talked about, you know, how immediately after the 911 attack, and Donald Rumsfeld is saying, where are we going to bomb, and let's start bombing Iraq, and of course, Clark said on 60 Minutes, I told Donald Rumsfeld this had nothing to do with Iraq. It had to do with Afghanistan. It had to do with Al-Qaeda. It had to do with Osama bin Laden. If we were going to bomb anybody, it ought to be Afghanistan. And Rumsfeld's remark, according to Clark, was, but there are no good targets in Afghanistan. That's why we've got to bomb Iraq. And, of course, Clark likened that to the attack on Pearl Harbor, and we immediately bombed Mexico rather than Japan.
Yes. I'm referring to Clark's debriefing by the committee several months ago in August of 2003, and we don't have those notes yet. These were executive sessions, not for public consumption, but they are transcribed, and I'm wondering if they'll be released to the public, just so we can see if Secretary Lehman is accurate when he says that what Clark told this committee a few months ago is not what he told them today. It's not what is in his book. If either gentleman is shading the truth there, it would have serious implications for the committee one way or the other. I would add, you know, one of the assertions that you just cited, Dr. Stan, that Clark made in the 60 Minutes interview, that there are no connections between Iraq and Al-Qaeda, this is, you know, just one of the numerous anomalies, shall we say, in between the account he's giving now and, in this case, the account that's in his book. In his book, and we reported this on the Newsmax website last night, in his book, he talks about a link, a possible link anyway, the evidence he felt pointed to this link between Al-Qaeda operating in the Sudan and Iraq. The Al-Shifa pharmaceutical plant, this is the facility that President Clinton bombed in August 1998. According to Clark, it was producing the chemical compound EMTA, and he said that that is an exclusive chemical agent to the Iraqi government. Iraq is the only known nation in the world that uses that compound, and that he felt was reasonable evidence that this Al-Shifa pharmaceutical plant was making weapons of mass destruction with the help of Iraqi scientists and the financing of Osama bin Laden. Now, we don't know. These are Clark's assertions. There's a lot of conflicting accounts about what was going on at that Al-Shifa plant. A lot of people do not believe that it was involved in making chemical weapons, but Clark did. It's in his book, and he says there was an Al-Qaeda and an Iraqi tie-in. So when he tells Leslie Stahl on 60 Minutes there was no evidence that these two organizations were working in cahoots, it doesn't jibe with what's in his book.
Well, of course, what he said was that after we had attacked, after the Iraqis had tried to kill George Herbert Walker Bush, that they'd send a message to Iraq with cruise missiles, and that simply wiped out their intelligence agencies, that wiped out several of their key centers. And then they said, if you get involved in any more terrorism after this, why, of course, you will be, we will just take out your whole government. And he said after that, the Iraqis, which had been probably working with some of the terrorists before that, after that, they quit working with them. Because that was, what, 94, 95? When was that?
That was 93. It was very early on in the Clinton administration. And the pharmaceutical plant and the intelligence they had, in fact, here, I'll quote directly. Clark says this was in 1996. Where he says the compound EMTA was discovered at the Al-Shifa plant. EMTA, he says, writes Clark, is a compound that has been used as a prime ingredient in Iraqi nerve gas. It has no other known use, nor had any other nation employed EMTA, to our knowledge, for any purpose. That's Richard Clark, talking about this plant, which was bankrolled. The Clinton administration insisted bankrolled by bin Laden at the time. That was their primary justification for bombing it. And, of course, he was at the helm, as the counterterrorism czar, when that decision was made. So it may not be a major point, but when he says categorically to Leslie Stahl, there's no evidence that these people, Al-Qaeda and Iraq and the secret and the intelligence agency, Mukhabarat, ever worked together. That's not what he says in his book. And, you know, if this was the only example, you'd say, well, maybe we could look the other way. But there's apparently a growing laundry list of questions about what he said then versus what he's saying now.
Do you think that there's a conscious effort on the part of the Bush administration to discredit Richard Clark?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. As early as well, in a sense, you got to wonder what took them so long. And, you know, I'm an advocacy journalist. In this case, I think I generally come down where the rest of the media doesn't. Clark has so many reporters in his corner right now. I think there's a whole percentage of the story that needs a little bit more spotlighting. But it's funny, the Bush White House, the legal office anyway, the White House counsel's office, as with any White House counsel's office, they have to sign off on books like this to make sure it doesn't violate any national security concerns, divulge any classified information, and so forth. Now, if you remember what happened during the Clinton White House when Gary Aldrich had an insider's account of what went on inside that presidency, Unlimited Access, a bestseller in 1996, the White House counsel, the FBI, had to clear that book because that was where Gary Aldrich worked. Well, the FBI immediately leaked copies of the book to the White House counsel's office, and they began doing damage control months before the book came out. In fact, they even held up its release. Now, the White House didn't start doing damage control on this one until the news stories about Clark's 60 Minutes appearance took place over the weekend. And one of the curious things about the timing of this book is, you go back to, I believe it was the Publishers Weekly, which announces upcoming books. The book, there was a report this past January. This book was due out in April, and apparently, and this is the White House that's claiming this, but I've seen the Publishers Weekly report. The White House is claiming that it was moved up to coincide with his hearings, and that's really one of the aspects that Clark took the most fire today on from Secretary Lehman, who basically accused him of cashing in with his book on the back of the 9/11 tragedy.
I see. Well, of course, when you are testifying and you're being, instead of asking questions, you're being attacked by somebody on the commission, that puts you in a sort of a defensive position, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. He was, for the most part, Lehman was the only seriously hostile questioner. He got Clark got a little flack from one of the other Republicans on the commission. I believe it was Jim Johnson, who gave him a little trouble on the an account he gave to Fox. It was a background briefing that Fox News just reported on today, where once again his answers did not seem to reflect at all his current criticisms of the Bush White House in the war on terror. I think in the long run, Richard Clark will probably prove valuable as one part of the puzzle, one puzzle piece here. And but I think the media overdid it when they tried to paint him as the definitive insider who, you know, was an independent guy with no axe to grind. I think it's pretty apparent. I mean, when you make a statement, and Richard Clark said this over the weekend, that the Bush White House has done a terrible job in the war on terrorism, I think that comes with partisan lights all over it.
I wonder why they've never caught Osama bin Laden.
Oh, I think it. Look how long it took to catch Saddam Hussein. I think we may yet find him. I'm not sure.
Couple of months. We'll be back here in just a minute with Carl Limbacher right here at Radio Liberty. Another of our fascinating four tape sets is entitled Concentration Camps, and it's four interviews with people talking about the move to establish concentration camps in the United States. Now, most people say that's foolish talk. We couldn't have that. And yet, if you listen to these tapes, you'll find out that those camps are a reality. They are being set up in case of civil disturbance. And of course, the authority for the establishment of the concentration camps comes from the executive orders, which were actually put through during the time of the Reagan administration. For documentation of the location and the background to the formation of these camps, their establishment, and what may very well happen or what they may be used for in the future, I suggest you call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for America. Our values, our future are under attack today.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs, in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention something we carry here at Radio Liberty. It's called Phenopoly, and it's a program that's designed to teach you and your children and grandchildren how to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically. It's a great program. It's a play just like Monopoly, and you get things on the board, and you get property. But the whole idea is, in the process of playing the game, you learn the 40 sounds of the English language, the 12 rules of the English language, and in about 16 hours you can undo all the damage that's been done by government schools. Now, most of these programs that teach phonics and phonetic reading will cost you $300, $400, $500, $600, $800. This one's $139.95. It's loads of fun, and it really does work. And so if you'd like to know more about it, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. You can look it up on our web page at radioliberty.com, but give us a call here at Radio Liberty. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and our guest is Carl Limbacher. We're talking about Richard Tark's testimony, and the question is, you know, I think Mr. Clark's point is, we were attacked by Al-Qaeda. We were attacked by Osama bin Laden, and instead of going after Osama bin Laden, once, of course, we had disrupted the government there and taken the Taliban out and installed a new government, but instead of going after the head of the snake and al-Zawahiri and the other leaders of Al-Qaeda, why, we got some of the lower people of Al-Qaeda, and then we went to war in Iraq, and of course, Osama bin Laden had told the Arab people, if, you know, what the U.S. really wants to do is attack Arab countries and take away their oil, and what we've done is confirm exactly what Osama bin Laden was saying. Why did we want to go to war with Iraq when certainly all of the evidence suggests that Saddam Hussein did not have weapons of mass destruction, and admittedly he was a bad guy, but there are a lot of bad guys in the world. Are we going to go to war with all of them? Or is it simply because we want to get the oil that they have over there? What part does oil play in that decision? And, of course, I'm sure you've read Paul O'Neill's book, The Price of Loyalty, and on page 96, he talks about how in January of the year 2001, 8 months before the attack, why at the meetings, of the secret meetings of the cabinet, they were talking about the war with Iraq 8 months before the attack, and they were talking about the oil and how they were going to divvy up the oil.
Well, I think it is a legitimate question about whether the Bush administration was justified going into this war. I was tremendously frustrated, and by now it's conventional wisdom that there's no tie-in between bin Laden and Iraq. I'm tremendously frustrated by the Bush administration when they decided to go into Iraq. And they were looking for a state sponsor of terror, no question. I'll deal with the oil question in a second. But at least officially, they were looking for some sort of evidence of state sponsorship for the 9/11 attacks, Al-Qaeda being basically stateless beyond the Taliban in Afghanistan, which we made relatively short work of.
But how about Saudi Arabia? I mean, they were the ones that Wahhabis have been financing this thing from its beginning.
Yeah, there's a complicity among this in the Saudi royal... at the Saudi royal family and the Saudi elites. The state itself, at least outwardly, manifests no overt cooperation with Al-Qaeda. At least that's what they say. And I agree. Look, the Saudi royal family in Saudi Arabia has been a problem for decades. They've basically bought their way into Washington, D.C., and bought influence with each and every president, at least going back to Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And the Bush White House, I would also agree, is far and away too close to the Saudi royal family, as have past White Houses. That would include the Clinton White House. They've all accepted money from them in the terms of millions of dollars to the Clinton Library, millions of dollars to the Bush 41 Library. So there's an element of compromise there. And I'll tell you, I wanted to save this to the end, but let's get to it while we're here. I'll tell you where I think the Bush family, the Bush White House's biggest political vulnerability is, and I think it'll come up in the next round or in one of the next rounds of hearings. You know, these hearings aren't over. They're going to start up again in April. There's another session in May and a final session in June. I think their biggest vulnerability is what happened after the 9/11 attacks, where the Saudi royals were allowed to fly in a couple of chartered jets. And they flew all over the country and collected members of people close to the Saudi government and about 25 relatives of Osama bin Laden. American people, by and large, don't know this story because there was so much breaking news in the wake of the 9/11 attacks, but the Boston papers were full of this in the weeks after September 11th because that's where most of the bin Laden relatives lived. And this was about September 15th and 16th, where these jets were allowed to collect the bin Ladens at a time when they were still under investigation by the FBI. There were subpoenas out for bin Laden family banking records, and these were records that are in the United States. FBI agents were still grilling bin Laden family members. In fact, there's evidence that at least at the lower level of the FBI, the field agents were very, very unhappy about letting these planes fly out of the country. One Boston Globe report had the FBI agents scouring the bin Laden plane for any evidence that might have kept them in this country. They couldn't find it. They had no basis on which to hold them up. And the plane was given the green light to fly out. Now, no law enforcement agent, no governmental authority, no congressman, no senator has ever said that this order came from the White House. But the question, I guess, that somebody's going to want answered, I certainly do, is on whose authority did that happen? And I can't think of any lower authority than the Oval Office that would be allowed to happen. That's where the Bush family's biggest political liability is. I don't think it's in a war for oil, or I think even if you accept the argument that
Hold that thought right there, Carl. We've got to go to this break.
Sure.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, the Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, the Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I just want to mention the Big Berkey and the Berkey Life water filters. We carry them. We think it's a great item, and we have one ourselves. And if you like to clean up your water, have it taste better, and know that there are no significant herbicides or pesticides or bacteria or other harmful elements in it, why, of course, you can get either the Big Berkey or the Berkey Light. The Big Berkey is made out of stainless steel, and, of course, it's the pattern has been used for 150 years by missionaries. They put the water in the top. It goes by filtration through ceramic filters packed with activated carbon, comes out the bottom, and it tastes great. Loses the chloride taste. If you don't like the chloride taste in your water, the chlorine taste. And of course, you can see these up on our website at RadioLiberty.com. The Big Berkey costs $239, but it's not available in either California or in Iowa. Now, the Berkey Light is made out of Lexan. So it's clear, same material you make bulletproof glass out of. You can actually see the filters. You can see the water level, which is an advantage, which is why we have it. And, of course, the filters really work much more efficiently. There's just two filters rather than four. They're much larger, and they purify the water. They just take about everything out of it, except, of course, they won't take out arsenic or fluoride. But you can get special post-filters and put those on if you have fluoride in your water, you have arsenic in your water. The Berkey Light certainly is $199. If you buy either the Berkey Light or the Big Berkey from us, you'll get a free video or a free four-tape set we've created. So if you'd like to have something that you can take when you're going camping, or if there was a major crisis and you had difficulty getting water, why, you need a Berkey, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 for the Big Berkey or the Berkey Light. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Carl Limbacher. And, of course, he's been talking about one of the things that is certainly very concerning is the fact that immediately after the 9/11 attack, somebody gave permission for the bin Ladens and the other Saudis to leave this country. Because, of course, when the facts came out, why 15 of the 19 terrorists were from Saudi Arabia. And then even more shocking or more frightening is that, the initial investigation, the Joint Select Committee of the House and the Senate, they came up with a report with a lot about the Saudi financing of that, and the White House censored that information. They censored 28 pages of information that the Select Committee wanted the public to read, and then, of course, they censored a great deal of the rest of that report. I got a copy of it. I went through 200 pages, and 78 pages of that, besides the 28 pages, had things removed. So if there's nothing to conceal, why is the White House so concerned about the American people finding out the truth? And why did the White House block efforts by certain members of the families of the people who died, who were suing the Saudis so that they could actually get depositions and get the information and get court discovery? And the White House has blocked those investigations. If there's nothing to hide, why are they hiding it?
You know, I think there is something to hide. The question is whether it's criminal or otherwise. politically compromising, or whether it's, you know, based, has legitimate roots in foreign policy concerns or national security. And I cannot honestly say at this point, I do agree, though, it looks bad. I mean, part of what we know that implicates Saudi royals beyond the fact that 15 of the 19 hijackers came from Saudi Arabia comes from the very same guy who was reportedly the one who brought pressure on the White House to allow the bin Ladens to fly out. That's Prince Bandar bin Sultan. He's the U.S. Saudi ambassador to the United States, whose wife, I believe her name is Princess Haifa, either unknowingly or perhaps deliberately, indirectly gave money to a man out in, I believe it was San Diego, who rented an apartment to two of the 9/11 hijackers. Now, I guess that's a little like Kevin Bacon, six steps removed, but it's still a connection that is very troubling. And I think part of that report, part of the blacked out part of that report, probably has something to do with that. Although I should add, as a footnote, that the Saudi government, and it's hard to tell whether they were sincere in this, but the Saudi government ended up insisting to the Bush administration that they make public those redacted 28 pages, even as the Bush White House refused to do so. I don't know if that was a ploy to try and make themselves look innocent, knowing that the Bush White House wouldn't go along, or whether they really thought, as they said at the time, that the suspicions that redaction left swirling around this story were worse than anything that the truth would reveal. The White House apparently doesn't believe that, or maybe there is a legitimate national security basis for that redaction. At this point, though, I don't think any of us can be sure, but I do agree it doesn't look good.
Well, the only thing I could say from the national security point of view is maybe we don't want Osama bin Laden to find out what we knew and, of course, how much the Saudis were involved. How else could that affect our national security?
Well, that would be one way. They always talk about revealing sources and methods. Last week, for instance, NBC News broadcast a bombshell CIA videotape, which had been secret and was later determined, or at least alleged to have been classified. It was video footage shot by CIA Predator glider spy planes flying over one of bin Laden's compounds in Afghanistan, known as Tarnak Farms. And the footage was dramatic. It showed that the CIA indeed had pinpointed bin Laden's whereabouts in real-time pictures that were transmitted back to Washington, given this was in the fall of 2000, so the Clinton administration was still in power, and that raised all sorts of questions about why they didn't act on that information at the time. But as soon as NBC broadcast that video, the very next day, the CIA announced it was conducting an investigation into the leak to NBC. Now, this came as a shock to NBC's Lisa Myers, who worked hand in glove with numerous CIA sources on that video. She's not revealing the identity of the person or persons who gave her that tape, but she in no way ever believed she was compromising either classified information or revealing sources and methods. And frankly, I can't see how either. But that's what the CIA is claiming at this point. It's always hard to discern whether they're just covering up for secrecy's sake, or is there a real issue at stake here? And that's how it is with the 28 pages. The Saudis say they want them out. The Bush White House says, no, we better keep them secret. And I guess for the time being, we're just going to have to wait and see. I think some of this, though, it will be covered in the 9/11 hearings. I know they're lengthy and probably take too long for most people to spend more than a half hour it takes to get the summary on the evening news. But it really does, I think, behoove everybody who has questions about the 9/11 attacks to listen in and perhaps catch up to the extent possible on C-SPAN, because you do have a lot of valuable information coming out in these sessions.
Yeah, but don't you think there's a conscious effort to cover up the information as well? What really bothers me is the president insisted on having his people in key positions on that committee to investigate the administration to see if they were covering up anything. How can we have an independent investigation when the president has a large part to do with selecting who's on the committee?
Well, it was the Bush White House, and at least from my perspective, has never been very good at enforcing partisan authoritarianism. You're right. They've got their people in key positions of the committee, but the other half, the staff, it's split evenly, Democrat, Republican. The other half, the staff, was appointed by Senator Tom Daschle, the now minority leader of the Senate. And you got some vivid partisans on the Democratic side. I have to say, in all honesty, just because the people on the Democrat side have been a little bit more colorful in terms of their past, I'm familiar with their partisan stripe a little bit more. But Richard Benveniste, one of the lead questioners in the 2 days of this session of hearings, this guy was the co-counsel, the Democrat co-counsel for the Whitewater hearings. He was one of the lead Democrat counsels during Watergate. And he was also a lawyer for Democratic National Committee Chairman Terry McAuliffe during the late 1990s. So, he's pretty wired into the Democratic Party. Jamie Gorelick, Deputy Assistant Attorney General under Janet Reno. Some people have suggested that Gorelick has a conflict of interest in as much as if there were things done wrong during the late 1990s in terms of rulings that said bin Laden was not indictable or wasn't a legal basis to attack the USS Cole. Well, that would reflect negatively on the Reno Justice Department, where Gorelick served at the time, so that could be problematic as well. One of the Democrats who acts a little bit more like a Republican, at least at times, is Senator Bob Kerry, not to be confused with the Democratic presidential likely nominee, John Kerry. But he's attacked both sides with gusto. Yesterday's grilling by Kerry of Madeleine Albright, I think, was one of the most dramatic exchanges of the entire investigation so far, where he basically reamed her out for dragging her feet on some of this inaction that he said was, just unacceptable and really did send the wrong signal to al-Qaeda. On the Republican side today, you've seen for the first time, to my knowledge anyway, some of the partisan fangs come out with Navy Secretary John Layman and his attack of Richard Clark and his credibility and the book deal, which I'm a little sympathetic to this. I actually called the 9/11 Commission on Monday and asked them, because I was genuinely offended. I'm surprised there hasn't been more outrage. The fact that Clark is in the middle of this book promotion, he's going to be able to use this forum as basically a plug for his book. Some people were joking this morning that he's going to turn this investigation into a book signing. It hasn't gotten that bad, but I wanted to find out if there was any thought to maybe postponing his appearance after the publicity blitz had died down. And the committee hadn't at least the spokesperson for the committee said he wasn't aware of any concerns along those lines. Well, obviously Secretary Layman was concerned, and Fred Fielding, who was actually a lawyer who goes back to the Nixon White House days, he said he seconded that concern. I guess you'd have to call him partisan for the Republicans, too.
Well, of course, was this Mr. Clark's decision, or was this his publisher's decision? Is Richard Clark trying to do this, or is his publisher thought that this would be a good opportunity? And can we condemn Clark because of his publisher's decision?
We don't know at this point. I would say Clark is culpable in as much as he's the guy who's going to stand to directly benefit by maximizing the exposure on this book.
I would think the publisher would be the one who'd really make the money.
I'm sure. Yeah, they're going to make more money, but he's got a direct. We don't know how much of an advance he collected. I assume it's a healthy advance, a six-figure advance, but we don't know exactly what yet. The media hasn't seen fit to pursue that question to any degree.
But it's not like the advance that Bill Clinton got on the book he's never written yet. I think it was, $10 million he got on a book he's never written. That is pretty good profit, especially when you don't write the book.
Yeah, it's interesting. Although Bill Clinton's publisher is Alfred Knopf. The Simon & Schuster is the one who was bankrolling all these these other books, the Paul O'Neill book, the Richard Clark book.
Now, wait a minute. I thought that that book was published by Free Press. Is that Simon & Schuster?
I think that's a division of Simon & Schuster.
All right. I guess.
Reportedly, they're going to be handling the upcoming Bob Woodward book, which is going to take a different tack as far as the Bush White House goes from his previous screed, Bush at War, which was largely favorable. This is, I think, a little bit darker view. I don't know where he's going with it, but I'm sure that's going to get the same kind of publicity blitz that the Clark book does, although it's going to be hard to top Clark with these hearings, because his promotion has become a genuine news story, and I can't think of another book promotion with so much real news surrounding it. I mean, Hillary got a ton of publicity, probably more than Clark, but there was very little real news in that book. This one has a ton of real news.
It certainly does. Well, you know, I'm so worried about this idea of having everything our government has classified, or so much of it classified. Do you know that a lot of the information dealing with the attack on Pearl Harbor is still classified to this day? I wonder, are we trying to keep the Japanese from finding out what we knew ahead of time, or are they trying to keep the American people from knowing what really happened? And so many of the major events, you know, all the information is classified. Almost looks like a government cover-up.
Yeah, it does. I was not aware that there was that much material from Pearl Harbor still being classified.
Yes, of course. It's covered by Robert Stinnett's book, The Day of Deceit. He spent 10 years trying to get the material out, and as he said, most of the information he couldn't get, but he did get some of it.
That's amazing. I guess there is a mentality that pervades the government bureaucracy. They're just reluctant to release any information, but certainly, especially over this period of time, what are we, 70 years out now? Almost,
right.
It really does beg the question, what at this point, and does any of it matter? What are you hiding? Found out the worst about either Roosevelt or Wendell Willkie, or I don't know what they could be covering up.
I think that they don't want the American people to really understand that there were people in the White House who were quite willing to sacrifice 3,000 American lives as long as it got us into a war. And the war, of course, was with Japan and with Germany.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, questions about what we knew about the whereabouts of the Japanese fleet. For instance, the story I've always, and I haven't done a lot of research on this, but I've always understood, at least the official line, is that we lost the whereabouts of the Japanese fleet for a period of days before the December 7th attacks. You're right. If it came out that we knew they were a few hundred miles off of the Hawaiian Islands on December 5th and still did nothing, that would certainly beg the question what was going on there. I'm more concerned, it's a little bit more recent, but we are approaching the point after which you wonder, why are they still hiding things? And that's the Kennedy assassination. I realize some of the principals, many of the principals, are still alive. I was just 11 years old at the time myself, but you know, at one point or another, you'd wonder, when is this going to come out? Because the questions that surround that really did change a generation's outlook on government. Between the Kennedy assassination, the Vietnam War, and Watergate, the people who lived through all of that by 1975 had an entirely different view than the generation that came before their government. I guess maybe that's part of the answer. There's a certain paternalistic attitude within the government bureaucracy that says that if the truth were out entirely, nobody would believe in anything we do.
Well, I think that the American people deserve the truth, and I don't want a paternalistic government. I want a government that is free and open with limited power, rather than a government that, of course, can begin watching the people and, of course, collecting dossiers on the people. In fact, in General Odom's recent book, Fixing Intelligence, he headed the NSA for many years. His book came out yesterday. He asked the question, he couldn't really say this, but he asked the question, should the Army be keeping surveillance files on American citizens? And what he's really telling us is they are keeping surveillance files. Of course, DARPA was going to do that. Congress objected, so they just changed the name, and they're doing it under other circumstances. I think we should really be concerned why they want surveillance files on law-abiding citizens.
Yeah, this is an entirely different question before the 9/11 attacks than it was now, and I know a lot of people are harshly critical, for instance, of the Patriot Act, I think by and large the American people are willing to, part of it's lethargy and apathy, but part of it is, I think, an acknowledgement that there were certain restrictions that were just downright silly. I mean, stuff that was available on the internet to all of us that the FBI couldn't use. Some of the intelligence that could have been gathered but for the grand jury secrecy rules that obtained during the first the 93 World Trade Center bombing investigation. It's amazing if you go back over some of those court transcripts and you see some of the testimony of Ramzi Youssef and some of the other bomb plotters, and realize that this was the core cell from which the 9/11 plot sprang. The fact that Youssef later turned up in the Philippines with his partner, who and they were cooking up a bomb to kill the Pope. And when something went wrong in this apartment and the fire department showed up and the cops showed up and it was raided and they got Ramzi Youssef's laptop computer, they found a blueprint for what turned out to be the 9/11 attacks. All of this was available in the mid-1990s, but because of different restrictions in terms of sharing information with domestic intelligence versus the legal system, the people who could do something about it were kept in the dark.
We're going to have to let you go, Carl. We could go on for another hour, but God bless you. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
Could you believe that there is an organized effort to dumb down children all across America? As we see falling SAT scores, it's very easy to say, well, gee, we need to just spend more money. That'll solve our problem. Ladies and gentlemen, that won't solve the problem at all, because there is an organized program within the hierarchy of education to dumb down our children intentionally. Outcome-Based Education is a fascinating book written by Pamela Hobbs Hopker and Pat Lutzik, going into the background of the program of the humanists who gained control of the educational establishment of the United States to change the attitude of our children, to change their attitude towards God and family and country. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for Outcome-Based Education. Once you understand what they're doing to your children, you'll never look at the world through the same eyes again. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course there is so much information that the American people really need to have to understand what's going on. Who financed the Al-Qaeda? Who financed the Islamic terrorist movement prior to 9/11? We have a book written in 1999 by a Swiss journalist who spent 4 years touring the whole Middle East to find out who was putting up the money for the Islamic terrorist movement. It's called Dollars for Terror. It's available through Radio Liberty. They have a wonderful book written by a man named Joseph Podansky, who is the director of terrorism and unconditional warfare research for the House Republicans. His book is called Bin Laden, The Man Who Declared War on America. Both of these books will give you tremendous insight into the events that led up to the 9/11 attack. And believe me, for instance, you probably didn't understand that the Islamic radicals took full credit for taking down TWA Flight 800, but the American people were never allowed to know that. And they kept saying, we did it, we did it, we took down your plane. And, of course, the American government said, oh, no, it was an explosion in the central fuel tank. Never happened before. I mean, nobody that I know who works in the aviation industry believes that story. But you could sell it to the American people. Over almost 300 people saw the missiles streaking skyward. But, of course, the government insisted that they were all mistaken. You need to get the video silenced, and all of these items are available. If you'll simply give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, that's the video silenced. That's the book Dollars for Terror and the book Bin Laden, The Man Who Declared War Against America. You need to have this information to understand what's going on and to prepare for the future. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day. Now, you can listen to our programs 5 hours on the internet, on various internet sites, and you can go to our website at radioliberty.com and find out. Of course, you'll be listening to this two-hour segment on GCNlive.com. That's GCNlive.com. Or you can get the second hour at radiolibertylive.com. Our early morning program, of course, is heard on americannewsnet.com. We do 4 hours of shortwave a day, and we do this so we can reach the central part of the United States and the eastern part of the United States with our evening program. It's 8 to 10 every evening on this same station. And 3 hours from now, we'll be back again, and we hope that you'll be listening on shortwave. We also hope that you'll be telling others about our shortwave program. And if they don't have a shortwave station, why, you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We can direct you towards a shortwave, where we actually carry a Sanjian with a 20-foot aerial, 24-foot aerial. And an aerial is the key to getting good reception to your shortwave. So we want you to get the information, and then we want you, of course, to get to other people, to try to get them to check out the facts. You need to get some of the material we have, like my video, Iraq, the Untold Story. And, of course, we talk a lot about many, many things that seem so strange, but there's a syllabus that goes with that that verifies exactly what we've said. We have a video called The Best Enemies Money Can Buy. It's my interview with Professor Sutton. And then, of course, you can get his book by the same title. There is my video, The Brotherhood of Darkness, and there's a book that goes with that that has all the sources of reference, so you can check down and find out about the secret societies and document the fact that they do exist, and that you would more effectively describe what's happening. We have a video called Millennium Madness. It's based upon the conference that they had in New York City in the year 2000. And then there's a syllabus goes with that that has so much documentation, so you can understand, and you'll see many of the documents about how they're planning their world government. And, of course, who is behind it? Because it really is being, of course, pushed by the occultists, by the demonic forces, by people who are disciples of Madame Blavatsky. And, of course, you'll actually see the pages from Woodrow Wilson's book, where he talks about so many men he knows, leading men of the country, are afraid of someone. They're afraid of something, so that they will really only speak about it in a hushed voice. And you'll actually see the pages from his book. It came out in 1913. It's out of copyright, so we can provide that for you. You need to get my 4-tape set on sustainable development, or the video on sustainable development. And then there's this syllabus that goes with that, which will give you the overview of this whole program. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. All of these things are available through Radio Liberty. We ask you, of course, to go to our website at radioliberty.com to tell others about the website. Encourage them to listen to our radio programs. Encourage them to listen to our internet programs or to our shortwave programs. Because people are going to have to tell people to tell people. There are an awful lot of good Americans out there who know that something is wrong. Our job is to point them in the right direction, and your job is to help us get that information out. So remember, the address of our website is radioliberty.com, www.radioliberty.com, where you can pull down our newsletters, where you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day, where you can see some of the items that we have that we do sell that help us to stay on the air. And then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers. We ask you to pray for revival, because if America doesn't turn back to God, I seriously fear that God is going to bring his wrath on this country. And lastly, we ask you to remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, and for our staff, because we're on the front lines of this battle all day, every day. Until tomorrow at the same time, when we'll be back with you once again. Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.